The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So a number of years ago, I did the three-month retreat at the Insight Meditation Society in Massachusetts. And during this retreat, the teachers each speak once a week because it's a pretty big teaching team. And one of those teachers at that retreat was James Barras. And he would talk about joy every week, an aspect of joy. And he had written a book about it, you might have heard about it, called Awakening Joy. And systematically he went over findings that he documented in this book. And I remember that every time he offered a talk on joy or an aspect of it, that my spirits would be lifted. Like if I was in a difficult place in my practice, then hearing him talk about joy and other related wholesome qualities really gave my practice a new boost. And all of a sudden, things weren't as bad anymore and as heavy. So I can't really remember all the details anymore. It's been a number of years. But I do remember the effect of these talks. And often teachers talk about suffering and all the related stuff, but which is really valuable, of course, because that's also part of our lives. But every once in a while, it might be nice to just hear about the beautiful things in the world, about joy and kindness and gratitude. I think that engaging a little bit more with the goodness and the joy and the beauty in the world helps to balance this tendency that a lot of us have to pay attention to all the things that are not going so well, all the suffering or the difficulties that we experience in our personal lives and that are out there in the world. And sometimes it's called negativity bias. So today I talk to maybe balance this out a little bit, a talk on joy and its cousins. And most of this talk is inspired by James Barras' work and some also on just the standard Buddhist teachings or my own experience. And James really emphasizes how important it is to cultivate wholesome states of mind. And some examples of that are joy, like I said, but also contentment, love, happiness, generosity, kindness, relaxation, peace, gratitude, equanimity, compassion, serenity, patience, a lot of qualities. And these states of minds are all very wholesome and very worthwhile cultivating. And joy is just one of the many wholesome states of mind that we can experience and cultivate. And so today, the quote-unquote official topic is joy, but that's just a way to introduce all of those wholesome states of mind. I think James said something around calling his book Awakening Joy because awakening contentment doesn't sound so flashy. So James also says it might be easier than we think to cultivate these wholesome states of mind. And he would often do little exercises during the retreat with the yogis. And one of these was an exercise in mindful appreciation. And I thought it might be nice to try that out right now. It's really short. So we can start by just becoming aware of our general mood. And if it feels helpful, you can close your eyes to tune into what is the mood right now? Is it tired or is it energetic or is there aversion present? Is there happiness, worry? And now without trying to make anything special happen, you can take a few moments to notice what is here right now to appreciate in this moment. If you can't really think of anything, then you can start with the fact that you're alive and that you're able to hear these words. We'll see what is here to appreciate. notice what it feels like to look at the present moment with this appreciative eye. And you can feel it's really in your being. Let it register in your body, in your mind. And what does it feel like in the body? In the mind, maybe more lightness or energy, openness. Maybe you can notice that the mood has shifted just a little bit from when you started. And that's the end of the exercise. And every moment has the potential for appreciation and gratitude. And it can have, sometimes if we try this, quite a dramatic effect on our level of well-being. Simply appreciating what is present in this moment can shift our view of things. When I did this exercise myself, again, also in preparation for this talk, and I noticed also in the hours after that I tried it, that my level of appreciation had increased. So it kind of lingered for a little bit. And I noticed the pleasantness of it. It can be really heart-opening to look through this lens of appreciation. And sometimes, if we have more of this lens of appreciation, then even things that would normally irritate us, then like, for example, an annoying colleague or maybe a traffic light turning yellow right as we approach, and that we then can see those things with a kinder attitude, with more understanding, and just because our view has shifted a little bit. So we can just kind of sow little seeds of appreciation here and there whenever we feel like it, by, for example, doing this little exercise. And, you know, there might be times that the only thing that we can think of is that we appreciate being alive and that we're breathing, or that we can feel our body, or that we can feel our mind if our body hurts, that we can notice mind processes. So that's okay, because we sometimes just go through rough times and we don't have to fake any appreciation or any other wholesome states, of course. So we can just also be real and truthful to what's here. And so in James's book, he describes 10 qualities that people have who are naturally happy or naturally joyful. So people from whom people in the environment said, like, oh, this person is always really happy. And I thought it might be nice to go over some of these to give us a little bit of insight in how we can maybe cultivate this as well in our own lives. And the first I want to highlight is that actually knowing how to open to suffering is helpful. So that's backtracking a little bit to suffering. But even if we're always happy, even those who are always or naturally happy are not always happy, of course. So we all have ups and downs, but the difference between people who are not naturally happy and those who are naturally happy is that they are able to open to when the suffering is present, when difficulty is present. And I think that we are all familiar with how to do that, because we can do that through mindfulness, through our Vipassana practice, our meditation practice, because we are basically practicing to opening to whatever arises, whether it is pleasant or unpleasant, painful. And if we're not super aware of that yet, or we're not super familiar with it yet, then, you know, it might be useful to start with small difficulties and not right away with our biggest sorrows and difficulties. And a simple example would be to start with being aware and present for unpleasant sound or an unpleasant body sensation. And then just stay with it, not kind of right away try to change things, but stay with it for just a little bit, with the unpleasantness, with the aversion, with the irritation or annoyance, and letting it be the way it is. And that is a way to start opening to the suffering in that moment. And if we start with the little things, then, you know, we can expand it to slightly bigger things gradually. And maybe we can at some point really be aware of loneliness or grief or other sorrows that we might have without it needing to change and just seeing it as, yeah, as a mind state that changes. So these joy practices are not about shying away from suffering or difficulty. It is more about training our resilience to be with whatever arises. And being able to be with whatever arises helps us to get back to joy more easily, or happiness, or contentment, or kindness. It's like when we open to the difficulty, then the suffering, you know, the difficulty tends to slide off like us, like, you know, butter slides to a pan. But if we resist our suffering, then it's like in baking something in a pan that is, you know, the non-stick coating has wear it off from. So we're just kind of, it sticks and it burns and it's, you know, unpleasant. And so another quality that these naturally happy people have is that they have the intention to be happy. They have the intention to place happiness at the center of their lives. And I thought that was interesting. Before I got in touch with Buddhism, I tried out actually many different spiritual paths, mostly these new agey kind of practices. And one of those practices advocated to always make sure that you feel okay or happy before you kind of proceed on with your life. And not to ignore the difficulties, but just to try to make sure that you feel at least okay-ish before you start to act in the world. And I've been trying that ever since. And of course, it doesn't always work because sometimes you're just not happy. and sometimes life's just happening. But the difference that it has made in my own practice is that there's the intention to cultivate the wholesome. So when I notice that difficulties are present, suffering is present, then there is this intention in the background that is by now kind of automatic to return to a state of okayness. And I feel that this intention makes a huge difference. Because sometimes if we don't have this intention, then we might kind of, you know, wallow in the suffering a little longer than necessary. And the important point here is that it's not that we should spiritually bypass whatever's going on. That's not what I'm trying to advocate. Because that wouldn't be so wholesome. But what comes in handy in this point is that that first point that I made, that we know how to open to suffering so that we don't have to bypass it. And I think actually that the opening to suffering, the suffering is inevitable. So, you know, we can just as well open to it because it's going to be in our lives. It's part of our lives. It is an opening to it is one of the fastest ways to happiness. Like I said, with that pen, like if we don't open to it, it's just going to stick. So another quality that people who are naturally happy possess is that they live with integrity. And I think this is very Buddhist as well, because the Buddha strongly advocates to live a wholesome life, to, for example, follow the precepts of non-harming. I talked about that several weeks ago. The Buddha also points out that when we act without integrity, without ethics, then a lot of remorse and regret might arise. And remorse and regret are not very conducive for happiness. So, and it's also in the Buddhist, on the Buddhist path, that ethics is a foundation for our practice. There's two lists of the three pillars of our practice, and one is the generosity, ethics, and meditation are the three basic things we need for our practice. And the other is that we have ethics, concentration, and wisdom as the three things that we need for our practice. So both lists have ethics on it. And living a life of integrity, of ethics, can actually in itself be a reason for joy and feel really good. It really helps to gladden the mind, to not harm not ourselves or others. It can really feel like a clean heart, almost. It sounds a little weird, but it can feel like a clean heart. And one cool thing I think about Buddhism is that the Buddha sometimes advises to even reflect on our own ethical behavior and to rejoice in it. And that's maybe a little un-Western to do, because then we think, you know, oh, I'm blowing up my ego. But that's not what the Buddha intended, because the Buddha intended for us to genuinely see the goodness of our own ethical behavior and be happy about our own ethical behavior and feel that gladness in our hearts. And not to pat ourselves on the back necessarily. So, yeah, another quality of those happy people is that they are good at letting things go. So it's kind of like they like, you know, it comes natural to them to have a simple life. And you can imagine that the simpler your life, the less worries there are, and the more room for contentment and joy. And there are four ways to let go. And one is that we can, at least for that James calls out, one is that we can let go of things and stuff. Like when we bring stuff to the goodwill, or when we give stuff away to friends, or maybe, you know, when it's not suitable for charity anymore, we might throw it out. We can also let go of busyness, which is a really useful one in these times in our lives. And we might all have these episodes of busyness. But might be useful to reflect, are we actually happier with all this busyness, or would it be that we're happier without the busyness? Now, not that we always have a choice, of course, because we might have a job and a family life and whatnot, and we just can't help it. But if we do have a choice, then maybe we can let go of busyness. And another way would be to let go of our stories. And for some people, like one of my friends, he tends to live in his stories, basically. And often when I share something about my life, then he starts talking about all the stories that he has connected to that, what I'm sharing. And he's getting better at not doing that, I have to say. And I can say to him, oh, you're doing this thing again. And then he's, oh yeah, I'm sorry. So that's good in our friendship. But, you know, sometimes we just habitually like have this flood of stories going on, and that we also, you know, tell other people the same stories over and over again, or we tell the same stories in our mind over and over again. And it can be really freeing to stop ourselves in our tracks and just say, oh, wait, I don't have to tell this story over and over again. I can just stop here and just notice what's happening right here. And then the last way that James describes of letting go is generosity. We can offer our time, our money. We can offer a listening ear or a smile. There are so many ways in which we can practice generosity. And I also gave a talk on that several weeks ago, if you're curious to hear more. So those four things around letting go, where let go of things and stuff, let go of busyness, to let go of stories, and to practice generosity. So James looks at even more qualities that happy people have in common. And another one, which I think is also very Buddhist, is that happy people tend to want the best for other people. Even if others disappoint them, they still wish others well. And they still keep on the lookout for the good in others. And you can imagine that that gives a really good feeling in the heart. If we keep on the lookout for the good in others and we don't get upset or grumpy too much with others when they disappoint us, or just in general. It also reminds me of the practice of the Brahma Viharas, where we practice wishing others well, like we did at the end of the meditation. And eventually with the Brahma Vihara practice, we also practice with difficult people. And the good thing about it is that it is a practice that we can, because that we get better at it, more skilled at it. So loving kindness is one of those Brahma Viharas that we did at the end of the meditation. And then there's also compassion practice and mudita practice, which means sympathetic joy. And I'll get that back to that one in a little bit. And compassion as well, by the way. because compassion is one of those Brahma Viharas that James singles out as a quality that happy people have. And compassion is the quality of the heart that responds to the suffering of others. It is almost like the loving kindness that we did, but then directed towards suffering. So when we feel compassion, it usually comes up when others or ourselves are suffering. The thing is, though, that if we feel compassion for others, that we don't suffer ourselves. It's different from pity or empathy. Because then we kind of suffer together with the other person. We kind of feel what the other person feels. And compassion itself doesn't really, we can kind of understand it, but it's not that we are suffering. And a compassionate heart also wants to alleviate the suffering wherever possible. And this is, of course, not always possible or even desirable to alleviate the suffering. But it's kind of the inclination of the heart when compassion is present. And it's interesting that this opening to others' suffering is helpful in the cultivating of joy and happiness. And I think it might be the same as opening to our own suffering, which was the first of the qualities. Because it's about not shying away of the truths of life. And this not shying away of what is actually happening, what's actually present, can help us to open to more joyful and happy lives. Because I think that not opening to suffering and difficulty will contribute to the suppressing of the difficulties, the suppressing of our own hearts. And then it can become like a festering wound, inflicting more and more suffering. And I think we could, in this analogy, opening up to difficulty and facing the truth of what is here can help us to heal, help to keep those wounds clean, and so that they can heal in their own time, in their own way. And we don't have to force it or suppress it in any way. It's kind of a natural process. So those are some of the qualities that I wanted to name from James' work today. And the ones I named were opening to our own suffering, having the intention to be happy or joyful or wholesome, living an ethical life, letting things go, wanting the best for others, and compassion. And on that retreat I was on, James also kept emphasizing that we should notice those moments of joy, contentment, peace, and other wholesome states of mind. He would like repeatedly say, don't miss it, don't miss it. So I try to offer that a little bit in the meditation to notice what's happening, notice these little moments of joy or peace or tranquility or whatever it is, wholesome states of mind. Because we all have little moments of that throughout the day. And sometimes the only thing we need is to have this intention to have a little bit more attention for it, to notice it. So cultivating a joyful and happy life is very rewarding. And each of these qualities that James mentions in his book can contribute to the growth of more joy and wholesomeness in general. And most of them are very actionable. And I'll go over them, all of them again, with one sentence or so, and also naming the action that that's connected to it. And even if we only do one out of them in our lives, it probably already helps to grow our joy and happiness. So through our mindfulness practice, we slowly but steadily learn skillful ways to open to our own suffering. That was the first one. The second one is having an intention to cultivate happiness or okayness or joy in our lives can be simple, because intentions are one of the easiest ways to direct our lives in the direction that we want. It's a matter of just using this thought process of that an intention is kind of a thought process. And the stakes are not that high. We can just have an intention and then basically let go of it. That is actually the most helpful thing, not to cling to our intention. Not to get caught up in, is it going to happen or not, but just kind of a gentle invitation in the background, we could say. And then just see what happens or doesn't happen. And then the third point was living an ethical life, which is also very actionable, because the Buddha has given us clear guidelines on how to do this through the 5 precepts, which I gave a talk on earlier. And the 4 ways of letting go are also actionable. Letting go of stuff, busyness, stories, and practicing generosity. And wanting the best for others, which was also one of the points, we can cultivate that through our metta practice, our loving kindness practice. And then compassion, the last one, can be cultivated through compassion practice. And if you're not super aware with either metta, loving kindness, or compassion, then Happy Hour, which is also, we can find that on Audio Dharma, might be a good place to start. And so I also wanted to highlight one of the most obvious Buddhist ways that I can think of to cultivate joy directly is the mudita practice, the practice of sympathetic joy, which is one of those brahma-viharas that I spoke of earlier, which loving kindness and compassion are also part of, and then equanimity is the last one. And so mudita, the sympathetic joy, is the joy that we feel when others experience good fortune, success, or happiness. And I think that we probably all have felt this in our lives, because sometimes it can seem a little challenging, but if you imagine maybe a friend who worked through some difficulties in their lives, and now they feel, you know, just happy the way they are, they're just content with their lives. So that might make us feel happy too for them. Like, oh, I'm so glad that you feel good now, that you're fine, that your life is working for you now. Or when you see a child playing and laughing, you know, then a sense of joy can arise. Like, oh, look at that child, so happy. Another example would be if you're at the airport and you see 2 people like overly happy, hugging each other because they haven't seen each other for a while. And then we can also, our hearts can open like, oh, wow, that's so cool. They found each other again. So it can be relatively easy to feel this sense of joy for other people. And it might be easiest to feel this for people that we like and care about. So it's perfectly fine to use this practice for those kinds of people and the people that we care about. However, we can also train ourselves to even be happy and joyful for those that we don't like as much, or even feel aversion towards, or difficult people. So that is because we can train these brahmaviharas, so also the sympathetic joy, the mudita, we can train and cultivate. And the Dalai Lama said once, back in the day when there were still only 6 billion people in the world, he said, there are 6 billion people in the world. If you can share joy in the good things that happen to others, your chances of being joyful are increased by 6 billion. So I recently heard there are 8 billion people. I haven't looked it up, but it's now our chances increased by 8 billion now. So mudita is worthwhile to cultivate as well. And it's not always easy, I have to say, especially for those we don't like, because we might just not feel at all joyful for someone who we don't like, who is experiencing something good. So that's very normal. We experience like, oh, I don't really feel any joy. Or we even feel maybe jealousy or other states of mind like that. So we can just, you know, simply practice first with those people that it is easy for, which is, you know, totally fine to stay with those people for a while. It's just something that, you know, this needs practice, and slowly but steadily we can get better at it. And the practice itself is similar to metta practice. So what we did at the end of the meditation, we use phrases to express these wishes. And some of the potential phrases that you could use for mudita, just to name a few so you have an idea, is I rejoice in your happiness. I rejoice in your good fortune. May your joy continue. May it grow. May your joy lead to more and more ease and freedom. So that are just some examples. It's like with all the brahmavihara practices, we can be creative and come up with our own phrases as well. So maybe have phrases that resonate more than these, for example. So let me end with a quote by the meditation master Thich Nhat Hanh. A deeper definition of the word mudita, so the sympathetic joy, is a joy that is full of peace and contentment. We rejoice if we see others happy, but also rejoice in our own well-being. So may it be so. So we'll have some time for some sharing, discussion, or questions. Feel free to unmute yourself and if you have something to share or question. Yeah, Marianne.
I really enjoyed the talk today and needed it. I received something in the email today. I'm paraphrasing how interwoven gratitude and grief are. And the talk on joy today, I was feeling lonely and isolated. I've lost a relationship recently. And this little quote was saying how gratitude makes us content and appreciate, but how grief or loss motivates us to take an action. And I'm not very technologically savvy, and I thought I had it nailed getting into the Zoom group today, and I didn't, and I kind of panicked, and I thought, keep persevering. And at the last minute, I got in, and I was just so grateful and happy. And then when you talked about joy, I thought how much I appreciate this and value this and how nourishing it is to know help is always available and the answer shows up. So thank you. I really appreciated this.
Oh, wonderful. So good to hear. Thank you for sharing that. And it sounds a little bit like that I felt so nourished by James's talks on the retreat Like, yeah, it can be so nourishing to hear just about joy and wholesome states of mind. Thanks for sharing. Anything else? No, if there's not. Oh, yes, Jen.
Oh, was there someone else?
No.
Oh, can you say a little bit about contrasting joy with the experience of getting what we want?
Yeah, that's a good one. If we look closely at the wanting mind, then we can notice that it's actually unpleasant to have this the craving forward motion, and it's actually an unwholesome movement. Of course, we need to provide in our needs. You know, we have to go to the bathroom and eat and that kind of thing. But paying close attention to wanting can be really useful, and we can see how painful it is when we don't get what we want. Then we can see the painfulness. But if we do get what we want, then we often feel joy or happiness for a moment. And I would say that it's the craving towards what we want is unwholesome. But once we get what we want and we feel the happiness, that can just well be a wholesome state of mind in that moment. It's not to say that we should kind of crave in order to get it. What is more constructive, I think, is to let things happen. Like if we just walk, go around the block for a walk, and we see a flower and we feel like, oh, wow, beautiful. Or we smell the smell of the flower and then, oh, that smells so nice. Then it's kind of something that happens to us. It's not something we've been craving or wanting, and that's a difference than if next time we go out for the walk and we like crave for that same flower, like, oh yeah, where is it, the scent now, you know, and that's a different energy to it. So we can be aware of how do we get there, how do we get to the happiness, how do we get to the joy. Is there craving behind it, or is it actually, you know, in a wholesome way? And there can be wholesome craving as well. So, for example, the craving or the wanting for liberation is wholesome. The wanting wholesomeness itself is wholesome. Wanting, for example, other wholesome things like meditating is wholesome. You know, so there are some wholesome ones. The ones that are wholesome are the ones that bring us further on our paths towards less and less suffering. I know this answers your question a little bit.
Well, a couple of things came to mind as you were speaking. One, I think you were pointing to this, when we get what we want and as a result of craving, we feel that those good feelings, but often they're quickly replaced by the next thing that we need or want, or if we lose that thing, then there's suffering, and that's a little different. And the other thing that came to mind when you were speaking is, you know, it's reminding me of people getting accolades for service, and some people, you know, we'll do something to get the praise, right? And to get the accolades, and how that feels when one gets that versus doing the service because it's who you are and what you're wanting to give. And then maybe sometimes people give you accolades for that, right? But it isn't why you were doing it. And so then that feels completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. It is different, yeah. Mm-hmm. And one way to, for example, cultivate wholesome, even when this mindset comes up of wanting the accolades is to be kind to ourselves for that this arises, because it's just part of our conditioning. You know, we often like, it's like this hourglass, like all these causes and conditions come together in this moment. And then now in this moment, we have the opportunity to influence the rest that's going to filter out through the hourglass down to the bottom of the hourglass. So like having this mindset of wanting the accolades might be all part of these causes and conditions filtering down. And now in this moment, we see, oh yeah, of course, this is just part of my conditioning. Let me be kind to myself. And then the kindness filters through the future.